What's the relationship between strength and mobility? Are they really dependent on each other, or is one more so the focus for runners?
They're both important. If I had to label like which one's more important, you're probably going to get more bang for your buck with strength training. You can have all of the strength in the world in your glutes. If you can't have a good push-off position, you might not even use your glute. Your glute might still not be active because you don't have the range of motion.
The most important part of hitting any training goal is staying injury-free, so you can be consistent with your training. But this can also be one of the hardest parts. My guest today, Dr. Matt Silver, became interested in becoming a physical therapist after getting numerous running-related injuries while in high school and consulting multiple physical therapists and not getting better. That's why he decided to take it into his own hands to find a better way. He's the founder of Alpha Project Physio and joined me to talk about his approach to helping distance runners perform better and with less pain. I absolutely loved all the great exercises and form drills captured in his new book, Built to Run, but it was even more fun to hear it from him directly. We get into some pretty hotly contested running questions, including his thoughts on heel striking or nose breathing. And not to spoil anything, but the answers to both surprised me. Whether you're coming back from an injury or want to stay injury-free, his approach can help you, and I'm excited to share our conversation. So let's get into it. Hello, runners, and welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, where our goal is making you a better runner with each and every episode. I'm your showrunner, Corey Nagler, and I'm not an elite runner, but together we'll explore new strategies and topics to take your running to the next level. This podcast is created and produced by the expert team of coaches at runnersconnect.net, where you can find the best running information on the internet, as well as training plans to fit every runner and every budget. All right, Dr. Matt Silver, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Corey. It should be a fun talk.
Yeah, I think it will be. And it's funny, we actually fairly recently recorded one podcast that is on balancing running and strength. So I think after talking about how to balance the two, it's quite fun that we'll be diving a little bit more into what actually are some of the right strength routines and mobility too that we'll touch on to prevent injuries.
Yes, should be lots of good stuff. So I'm excited to dive into it. Should be a good talk.
Yeah, and one of the analogies I love from your book Built to Run was you describe it as a manual for staying healthy, and I think that's a great way to recap it, especially for somebody like myself who's coming off some IT band struggles, and I found strength training so key there. I want to start with some of the biggest impact movements that runners can make, and you actually quite literally refer to some of the more important movements as the big three or some of the more important muscles as the big two. Do you maybe want to elaborate on those?
Yeah. So the, like in for strength training for running, the big three are, squats, deadlift, and the Bulgarian split squat. To me, those are three movements that are, just super important, very important for runners. The squat and deadlift, you get a big hormonal response from that. Think of growth hormone, think of testosterone, just things that help build muscle, get a little bit of muscle mass on you and help you just stay strong. The Bulgarian split squat does do that, but also running is a single leg exercise. I mean, there's a period where your foot's on the ground, you push off, there's a period of float, and then your other foot hits the ground. So the definition between running and walking is with walking, there's a period of time where both feet are on the ground, Corey, and with running, there's a period of time, there's float time, you're hopping. So we have to make sure we're training single leg strength, and sometimes you might not get that with the squat, with the deadlift. So the Bulgarian split squat, you can still get heavy with that. I mean, I love it because you can train one leg, the back leg, you actually get a good stretch, a good mobility exercise on that side. You actually, you implement balance as well. So it's a really 3-in-1 exercise that I'm a massive fan of, and you can make it more hingy. You can make it more squatty because you can kind of hinge forwards into the Romanian deadlift, the Bulgarian split squat. So there's a lot of ways to do it. So those are the big three. The reason why they're the big three is you get a big hormonal response with squat and deadlift. You'll get a response like that with the split squat, but also you get balance, you get mobility work at the same time that are also, again, single leg, you're jumping on one leg, you probably need a good amount of balance. And then the big two, that is the calf and the hamstrings. Essentially, those are the two most used muscles when running, which aren't trained as much. You'll get the hamstrings when you're squatting, especially deadlifting, but it pays for runners. It pays for us, Corey, to train those a little bit more in isolation. And again, you could do single leg Romanian deadlifts. You can hit the hamstrings that way, but hitting the hamstrings by, you know, doing ball curls and you know, bringing your heel to your butt and resisting that, that's a huge thing. And it's not just the calf, it's the soleus muscle. Think of this as it's a slower twitch muscle, Corey, but man, it is super strong. It can just go. I think it can handle like 5 to 7 times your body weight. It is a massively strong muscle. Not as powerful as the other calf muscle, which is the gastrocnemius, but for runners, this muscle just, it gives you power. It just gives you a lot of just that oomph. Every time you push off, you're using that soleus. So it's a super important muscle. And the hamstring and soleus together, just they're two important muscles that we need to make sure that are strong, that have some capacity to resist fatigue and just go. Whether you're, hey, I'm going to run a 5K, a half marathon, a marathon, an ultra, these are areas you definitely want to pay attention to.
Yeah, and I really love a lot of the soleus exercises you put in your book and have been incorporating them into my routine, because I think as runners, it's often ingrained in us. You do calf raises, but I've never thought to really target a specific muscle group.
Yeah.
It seems like most of the exercises for that soleus, you tend to be similar movements to a normal calf raise, but essentially with a bend at the knee. Can you talk through a little bit about what that's doing or why it's focusing on the soleus?
Yeah, so when you do a calf raise, there's typically two ways to do it. You can do it with the knee straight, or you can do it with the knee bent. And it's definitely harder with the knee bent because, like, if I'm standing against the wall, my knee's bent. It's tempting to want to straighten your knee out as you do the calf raise. Another way you can do it is you're in that Bulgarian split squat position, and you can get low into it, and then you can put a weight on your knee. You could do a bent knee calf raise that way with a lot of knee bend. But the goal here is when your knee is straight, it tends to load more of that gastrocnemius, which is that more fast twitch, very explosive calf muscle, which you can do those. We should be doing those as runners. It's not that we never use that muscle, but we don't want to miss out on strengthening the soleus, which tends to be more active when the knee's bent. A big reason for that is the soleus does not cross the knee joint and the gastrocnemius does. So we can take into account, you can turn on and off the gastrocnemius by how much knee bend you have. Essentially, it's as the knee bends and as it straightens, those muscle fibers are put into the two positions where they're more active or less active. There is some research I've heard coming out recently that's like, oh, there's no difference depending on if you do them straight knee or bent knee. But I'm still when I do a bent knee calf raise, I feel more of my soleus. To me, if I feel it, it's doing what it's supposed to do. So whether the research is agreeing with it or not, when I do it, I know I feel my soleus more, and I tend to get a really good soleus pump, and the gastroc's nowhere near as active. So that's kind of what I mean by how can we hit the soleus versus gastroc, and it just, we end up using that soleus a heck of a lot more when distance running.
Yeah, I definitely feel it when I do those. As soon as you bend that knee, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, and if we're not used to it, Corey, it's like this sucks. And I'll show people when we have workshops and when I'm working with a patient one-on-one. Not that I have massive legs, but I can kind of do like a bodybuilding flex. I can show people, I'm like, hey, this is actually the gastroc, and this is the soleus, and there's two distinct kind of muscle bulges in your calf. The soleus, you can act some more on like the side, like the inside and outside, where the gastroc's more right in the back. You can see the difference, and it's in Latin, it's like soleus is Latin for flat fish. So it kind of looks like the muscle looks like a fish, like a trout or something, like if it was just right on your leg. But super important muscle, and it's a low hanging fruit that if you can work on that as a runner, it's going to help. Especially if you have like Achilles tendinosis, a plantar fasciitis, other lower extremity, like even some knee pain. Like if you get your soleus stronger, it can help with those as well.
Yeah, and I think those are good foundational pieces, both the big three and the big two that you touched on. But as much as I wanted the takeaway to be just do these things and you'll be set, you do mention this little thing called simple movements in your book that you need to incorporate as well. Can you elaborate on the difference between complex and simple movements and why it is that runners might need to do both in their strength training routines?
Oh, yeah. So do you mean like the more like the complex movements, like the split squat versus like, hey, we're going to do this. Like the hip kickouts, like you're standing on one leg, kicking the leg out with the band. Is that right, Corey?
Yeah, I was excited reading the big three, thinking I could just do these three exercises and I'd be set. But it sounds like it's not so simple.
Yeah, and for running, there it's a nuanced sport. It's very niche, and I found that out. And I mean, my history is I ran all through high school and college. Corey got injured. Well, I had to stop in college and got injured. That was kind of a motivation to be a PT and a physio. But you know, when it comes to when a runner is strength training, what do they need? Well, hey, we have to make sure we have pelvis control, and we have to make sure we have single leg balance and single leg strength and be strong on one leg. So, you know, compared to, I end up working with a good amount of power lifters and CrossFitters as well, where, hey, they don't do as much running. They do a lot more squatting. We probably have to focus more on that. But for running, hey, if you're running and your hip is excessively dropping or your knee's excessively caving in, well, there's a lot of reasons why that's happening. And it could be from strength. And if you just back squat and deadlift, you're going to build a lot of strength in your body overall. But, hey, we might have a deficiency in your glute medius muscle and the side of your hip. Or maybe one glute is a little bit stronger than the other, and the other side is really weak. Well, we might have to do some single leg hip thrust to strengthen that glute. Or some hey, I need to really hit that glute medius and do these hip hikes into a big Swiss ball or an exercise ball. So I'll think of this as like, hey, we might have to take a step back and hit the very detailed muscles, and then we can be more broad and more general. So we're kind of, I think of this sliding scale of squat, deadlift, and Bulgarian split squat. These are ones, the big, powerful exercises you want to be doing. And then as we scale down, we want to make sure all these muscles are active at doing what they're supposed to do, which the big two is part of that, the calf and the hamstrings. You're getting more detail with those, more simple exercises. But there's exercises that should probably be done on a regular basis, but definitely when I'm seeing someone and I'm like, man, your glute medius is turned off, your glute's super weak. Hey, we're starting from the basics. We're not just getting someone, hey, go squat with a 50-pound with a 50-pound kettlebell. Hey, we might need to get your glutes stronger and get that up to par, and then you can do that. So we're kind of finding, making sure you don't have any deficiencies, and then we can get heavier and more forceful and more powerful with these other exercises. Oh, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So it kind of sounds like those big three, these are exercises that everyone should do. They'll work muscles, and then you can kind of get more specific from there depending on your own deficiencies or strengths you want to build on. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a sliding scale too of like, hey, I need to like rehab my glute. My glute hurts. Every time I run, my side of my hip is killing me. Versus on the other side, someone might be strong enough to, hey, they don't have any pain. But hey, if we could build some extra capacity in there to bulletproof you, so you don't have injuries and just maintain that strength, hey, we should probably be doing something like that as well.
All right, and you talked about things being turned off. This is a term I always hear my chiro or physio use, and yeah. I kind of have only a very high level understanding, but I feel a little embarrassing that I don't really fully know what it means in terms of what the muscles are actually doing. So, what does that mean?
Yeah. So if you go to like your physio or your PT and they're like, hey, Corey, your butt's not working. What are you doing, dude? Like, why is your glute not turning on? It could be a couple different things. Number one is it's just weak. And a lot of runners, well, I mean, running, name me one distance runner, Corey, who has a really big powerlifting glute. I don't think you can name any of them. Like running uses the glute, but the hammies and the calves are a heck of a lot more used. The glutes, it's a...
Does Ryan Hall count?
Oh, not now. Not as powerlifting days. Maybe you could say back in 2004, right? That when he, or 2007, that when he was, I think he was
somewhere around there.
Yes, in the earlier mid 2000s. Then you can talk to him, but I don't think he had massive glutes then. But think of a muscle turned off as, hey, it's number one, we probably have to strength train this thing. Like, when I'm seeing someone who's, a good example is there's an owner of a CrossFit gym I've done some work with, and she front squats a lot of weight. It's like 170. And then she comes to me, she's like, hey, I think she was having some knee pain or hip pain. And I test her glutes. I'm like, you have zero glute strength. Like how are you able to front squat? Well, the front squat's a little more quad dominant, but she's using her quads, using her hamstrings, and using her back to be able to perform that lift. So, anytime someone says, hey, your muscle is turned off, it's definitely weak. Like that's number one. There can be some other things going on with it too, of you can strength train it till the cows come home and not see, you can do hip thrust all day and not feel a difference. Well, sometimes this actually is a mobility issue, Corey, where think of like if the muscle is a garden hose and you have a bunch of kinks in your hose, well, it may be very challenging to, if you squeeze the nozzle of the, you know, of the hose, you might not have a lot of water coming out, not a lot of force output, because those muscles are, they're not able to contract the way they should, not because they're weak, but because you have all this stiffness in the area. So it could be a part of, hey, you need a strength train, but also it could be a part of, hey, there might be some stiffness in the area, you know, whether it's fascia, it's muscles, and then we have to do some lacrosse ball work. Some people do foam rolling, which is essentially the same thing. I like a lacrosse ball or a barbell or a kettlebell because they're harder and they tend to be more effective. A last thing is sometimes you just have to bring more awareness to the area. And like, you can do hip thrust and just not know how to squeeze your butt. And I'm like, hey, Corey, squeeze your butt. And you're like, oh, man, I feel it. Bringing awareness can be a great way to just turn a muscle on. So sometimes when I strength test someone's glute, first I'll do it once and I'll say, hey, now really focus on squeezing your butt. And then all of a sudden they perform better. And we didn't do anything, Corey. We just cued them to squeeze their butt, which goes a long way. We can talk about that when we talk about running form. But cueing, I think, is underserved a little bit. So when we talk about why is my butt not turning on, or why am I weak, or you know, why is this turned off? I could need to strength train it. You could have some stiffness in the area. And also you could just, hey, we need to bring some more awareness to that area and have you fire it better just by giving you a cue.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. And we will come to the form piece. But one other thing you touched on when it comes to something being a little bit turned off is the mobility piece. So I'll ask this as bluntly as I can, but do runners need to stretch?
It depends. Someone else asked me this too. I was like late last week, like, should runners be stretching? And if so, how? So think of stretching as a part of mobility. If we have this mobility bucket in front of me, Corey, you have all these different subdivisions that are part of mobility. And stretching is a part of that, where the goal of stretching is you want to have optimal muscle length, optimal tissue length is probably the best way to say this. Where for running, some areas don't need to be as elongated, but two that do are your ankle joints and your hip joint. You need to get your leg behind you, need hip extension, and you need to have ankle dorsiflexion, which essentially is just your knee over toe motion, which gets a good amount of attention. I don't know if it gets a lot of attention for runners, but those are two areas that you need a heck of a lot of mobility in. And it's possible that that knee over toe motion, think about the bottom position of your soleus calf raise, your knee over toe calf, right? Your bent knee calf raise. You want to be able to get a good amount of knee over toe motion, because if we look at runners, and I've looked at YouTube, I watched, you know, high caliber runners run, Corey, they have a lot of knee over toe motion when their foot's a little bit behind them. When they hit the ground in front, their foot goes to mid stance, which is underneath them. And then when it gets slightly behind them, they have a lot of knee over toe motion. And if we don't have that, you may compensate, right? You have stiffness somewhere. It could be from the muscle. It could be from other things. But think of our goal with stretching is, you could have a short-term benefit of, I feel less sore, and that's fine. But really, the goal of stretching is holding it for 2 minutes or longer. It's a long time. You're breaking collagen bonds. You're breaking fibers. And that tissue is going to heal in an elongated position. There's a couple other ways to do that besides static stretching. But static stretching is, you know, it's the common way to do it. And you want to make sure your tissues are long enough to handle the demands that you're going to place on them when running, which typically isn't crazy. But for those two areas, that the knee over toe motion and the hip extension, which is bringing your leg behind you and potentially you're pushing off, you need a lot of mobility in the quads, the quadriceps, and in the calf muscles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you do want to incorporate some stretching into your routine, when is the best time to do this? Would you do that after or before a run? Is it closer to strength sessions?
I would definitely recommend, if you're going to do like the 2 minute hold, which I recommend, I would do that after you run. If you do it before, you'll end up, there's there's a couple of physiologic effects that happen when you hold the stretch for that long, Corey. One is your brain it's your nervous system just releases tension in the muscle, and you'll get a short-term elongation, which people are like, oh, I feel I have more mobility or more flexibility after I stretch. Even for 30 seconds, you might get this. What ends up happening is it actually turns the muscle off. So if you have a hard workout and you statically stretch your quads for 2 minutes, you might have some less, you decrease force output, and you might not hit the times you want to hit. Which if you're really stiff in the quads and really tight, it might actually, I might actually recommend it, because it's going to help you get into a better position. It will take the short term decrease of force output. But for the most part, I would recommend doing static stretching afterwards. My favorite one to do is called the couch stretch, C-O-C-O-U-C-H, not cow stretch. It's a couch stretch. If you don't know what it is, go, look it up on YouTube. It's on our Alpha, the Alpha Project Physio YouTube channel as well, if you want to look it up. It's a great stretch. I still do it consistently. I don't do it as often, but it's a great way to open the quads up. But yeah, that's what we essentially, that's the what should be your method of going into static stretching, is try to avoid it beforehand, unless you're really tight. But if you can do it afterwards, 2 or more minutes, that's the goal.
CBD is gaining a lot of attention in the endurance world right now, and for good reason. The biggest advantage of CBD for a runner like you is the anti-inflammatory properties. CBD can help your muscles heal and recover faster. Additionally, CBD can help you sleep better, which also leads to better rest and improved recovery times. There's a common belief that CBD will make you high, but this isn't necessarily the case, and Base is formulated to give you the anti-inflammatory properties without the high. CBD is even approved by the World Anti-Doping Agency. If you've ever tried CBD before and found it to be too weak or too strong, or you haven't tried it yet because you're not sure how to best start, then Base Health's Discovery Pack is a game changer. The Discovery Pack leads you through a 7-day experience for you to find your perfect dose by slowly increasing from 10 milligrams to 50 milligrams. It's the perfect way to dip your toes into CBD. If you want to see just how much CBD can improve your recovery, now is the time to give it a try. Right now, you can get half off the Discovery Pack, alongside a free sample of their balm. That's 50% off, from $25 to just $12.50. All you have to do is visit basehealth.com/runnersconnect, or enter the discount code runnersconnect at checkout to pick up your Discovery Pack and prioritize your recovery today. As the temperatures heat up, you'll hear more and more that you need to hydrate. But as an athlete, training effectively in the summer heat requires more than just water. You need electrolytes too, especially because you sweat more as a runner. Maintaining healthy electrolyte levels will not only improve performance and endurance on the run, but can help with preventing headaches, maintaining a healthy weight, and help with recovery. That's why we recommend all runners check out Element this summer. It's loaded with everything you need to replenish your electrolyte balance, with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium, and doesn't include anything you don't need, like extra sugar or anything artificial. Even better, they're currently running a special deal where you can get a free LMNT sample pack with any drink mix purchase. That means you can order your favorite flavor and get to try new flavors free. To get this special offer and make sure you're hydrating properly this summer, head over to drinklmnt.com/runnersconnect. And what's the relationship between strength and mobility? I know you talk in your book about how runners need some of that flexibility in order to benefit from the strength work. Are they really dependent on each other, or is one more so the focus for runners?
I'd say strength is probably, I mean, they're both important. If I had to label like which one's more important, you're probably going to get more bang for your buck with strength training. But imagine this though, like if all you do is strength train, and you strength train and you run, and you don't focus on mobility at all, Corey, when that leg, if you can't get your leg behind you, I mean, this goes back to the muscle activation. You can have all of the strength in the world in your glutes. And if you can't get, you have a good push-off position, you might not even use your glute. Your glute might not still not be active because you don't have the range of motion. And then what happens is your pelvis actually will tilt. It's called the anterior pelvic tilt, if anybody's ever heard of that before. And then, oh, my back hurts because my pelvis is tilting because your hip isn't allowing, your quad and your hip isn't allowing you to get in the hip extension. Your glute's not stabilizing your back. So there's just an ugly cycle I see where if you're lacking a lot of ankle and hip mobility, you can fall into all these different weird compensations that if we just fix your mobility, first of all, you're going to run more efficiently. It's going to improve your running form, but it's going to help you get into better positions when you strength train. So, and even when you're trying to squat, if you don't have the ankle mobility, well, you won't be able to get as deep. And yes, running, you actually technically could, you can kind of get away with going short range, but I'm a bigger fan of going longer range because I think it has a better bulletproofing and just injury prevention effect. Yeah, you don't have to go crazy heavy. We're runners. We're not trying to be power lifters. We're doing this to maintain strength and not get injured. And fun fact, running does not make you doesn't make you stronger. It makes you a more efficient runner. So we know running, I mean, it's working the heck out of your heart. Your muscles are being used to do the thing you love. We got to take care of the muscles. And how do you do that? Mobility work and strength training work.
I like that saying that it doesn't make you stronger. It makes you more efficient. Do you think that it actually breaks down your muscles, or is it more so a sense of it'll just exploit those weaknesses if you don't strength train?
Both, for sure. I think like more efficient runner, what are you getting more efficient at? Your heart's becoming stronger and able to pump blood farther, right? Or more, you know, it's been able to pump blood more efficiently. You have more mitochondrial density. Your red blood cells are more efficient at, you know, giving oxygen to your muscles. All that, you get all that from running. Different workouts do different things.
I think essentially, if running isn't building muscles, is it actually detracting from it? Are we trying to take away, or is there still some type of strength benefit from running?
Yeah, I think of it this way: your body is it's our bodies are amazing vessels, Corey, where we can handle the loads of running. I mean, running puts around 200 to 250% of your body weight on your body every step you take. So it's like me; I weigh 150. I got a barbell on my back that's also 150, that's 200%, and then plus another 50% would be 75. So I got is that 225? Yeah, I got 225 on my back, and I'm doing these single leg squats, you know, partial range single leg squats. A lot of force on your body. We're definitely going to get tissue breakdown, and the goal with so think of running as, it is going to give you some tissue breakdown. I mean, that's why when someone runs, they're like, my hip flexors are just so tight and sore after, my calves are so tight and sore. Well, you just strain the heck, especially if they're not strong enough, Corey. It's like a rubber band. You're pulling extra hard on it, and it's just a really thin band. It can't handle all that pulling. You want your rubber bands to be thick and to be powerful and to be strong. You want, especially your tendons. You want your tendons to be, actually want your tendons to be stiff and thick, like steel springs. You want your muscles to be supple steel springs, but you want your tendons to be like these stiff springs that you want it to be like really hard to pull back. Because guess what? When you pull it back and you let go, it's going to snap back together and you get a lot of force generation from that. So we want our muscles to be, I call them supple springs, supple, thick springs, that it takes a little bit of energy to pull them apart. But when they recoil back, you get a lot of energy from that. And if you don't strength train, your springs are just really thin. It's like that really thin, like, I don't know, mattress springs. You can just pull them apart with no effort. And well, eventually they might actually snap. And like, I'm not saying your muscles are going to snap, but that's, you know, just that thin spring is, hey, my calves are sore every time after I run, or my hip flexor is sore every time, my hamstring is sore after every time I run. We might need to stiffen your springs on you and be able to handle that load.
I think when we went back to some of the common issues you see or what we're trying to solve with the big three, you mentioned kind of, I think, two bigger causes, one being more so deficiencies in strength and mobility, but the other being form. So I want to come back there. Why is it that running form is so important?
Yeah, this is the question I get a lot. It's like, hey, is running form important? You know, someone told me just run natural, that should be fine. Or all I have to do is improve my, you know, just told me to run with a metronome and I should be fine, hit 180 steps per minute. And that's not bad advice. 180 is actually, you know, that's, well, we'll talk about probably later on why that number gets thrown around a lot, Corey. But running form, it's like squat form. It's your deadlift form. It's how, you know, it's your Bulgarian split squat form. If someone's, think of that 250% of your body weight, Corey. If someone is squatting, if I was squatting 225, which would be tough, that's a lot of weight for me. But if I was squatting 225, you better believe I want to have pretty good form. And as you get heavier, it's easier to lose that. And, you know, as long as you're trying to maintain it, it's a good thing. But if your knee's excessively caving in, you're squatting heavyweight, well, your glute might not be as active, number one, but you're putting your joints in bad positions, and your risk of having an ache or pain or injury is increased. So when we look at running, that once we realize, number one, running is a high force activity. It's actually a high power activity. Like that force, it's going through your body really fast. when you're on the ground court, this is why we do plyos, which we can talk about too. But plyos and power training is most people are, the most runners on the fast end, they're on the ground for like 0.15 seconds, maybe 0.2 seconds. And a slow run is around 0.3 seconds. So it is really fast. So again, if I'm going to squat 225 and my knee caves in excessively, well, I might cause some knee issues and, you know, tweak my knee. Well, with running is the same way. We don't want to have our knee excessively caving in when we're running. Because over time, every step you take, like, you might have knee issues, and that might cause runner's knee. It might cause some cartilage degeneration, and some cartilage to become painful on you. Or let's say your hip drops. So you have an excessive hip drop on one side. Well, now that might cause some IT band issues, and it might cause some back pain because now your back's compensating too, and you're overstriding, and now all of a sudden now there's you're spending too much energy. Now you're slowing yourself down every step you take. You have to reaccelerate. So running form is important because not only is it, we know there's a lot of force on your body, it happens so fast. And if we can optimize this, guess what? Instead of having 250% of your body weight in a bad position, it's 250% of your body weight in a good position that your body can handle, which is huge, which can really help avoid injuries. So not only does it make you a more efficient runner if you can optimize your running form, it helps keep injuries away, which I don't know any runner who would A, like to run faster, and more efficiently with less energy, and B, keep injuries away. I know I would. So I think running form, it's a really low hanging fruit that is starting to get more talked about more. And, you know, I wanted to do my part with Built to Run to say, I mean, the first chapter is an intro, but the second chapter is, it goes right into running form and all these things that many runners have no idea. You know, all these different running form impairments, like you're crossing over, you're too bouncy, you're overstriding, and how to actually work on those. So I think that's a really low hanging fruit that runners can, with mobility, running form is a low hanging fruit, Corey, that, man, if you can improve that, you can not bounce excessively, you can not overstride, your knee's not caving in, man, you can really optimize your efficiency and keep injuries away.
Yeah, and I really like in your description in that section when you're talking about these form deficiencies, the cues you list, which is essentially things to think about. In particular, I know that sometimes I have a bit of that hip drop, and the thinking about softballs I find quite helpful.
Oh yeah, like the ball, like the softball between the knees.
Yeah, exactly. Just making sure that they don't come closer together.
Yeah, and that's where we talk about cues again. Like, hey, my butt doesn't turn on. Hey, well, squeeze your butt, Corey. Maybe try that. Just bring some awareness to the area. Runners, I was talking about this with someone else like late last week, where if I think runners, we and I'm guilty of this myself, we get in this habit of, you know, I worked all day, I just want to go run, I want to de-stress and not think about anything. And by all means, you can do that. But if we could just bring a little bit of awareness and just think about and focus on how you're moving when you're running, and we're not trying to stress you out of like, I got to focus on things. Just be aware, just be present of how's your body feeling. And when I started incorporating this, Corey, with this and strength training goes really well, because as you strength train, you'll naturally be able to move better and control your movements. But if we can be more aware of just what we're feeling and be able to feel it, like, hey, do I feel my knees are caving in excessively? Let me focus on that softball cue. Or, hey, let me focus on my pelvis is a soup bowl, or a cereal bowl. Don't spill the cereal, you know, from side to side with a hip drop. And if you think about these things and just, hey, how am I feeling when I'm running? We can make these corrections very quickly versus 10 or, you know, 3 miles in. Oh man, my knee hurts. Oh man, I think my knee's caving in. Let me fix that. And all of a sudden your knee pain's gone. So I think that doesn't get as much attention as it needs to as well, of being present when you're running, not overly present, but enjoying running and just kind of having some check-ins, maybe once every 5 minutes. Hey, how am I feeling? Once every 3 minutes, how are things feeling? Oh, feels good. Okay, maintain it.
I think the simplicity of it is great too. As runners, we spend so much time packing in the miles. It's great to think that you can get improvement just by literally thinking about getting better. Use the example of your glutes. Like, just tell yourself, hey, keep it tight or keep it together.
Yeah. I will say this about the glutes. That doesn't mean like you have a full glute contraction when you're running. I just think like, I've actually struggled with the cue for this. I had someone the other day and it worked well, but we did these drills against the wall where you slightly lean into it, because running is a forwards controlled fall. It's a, you know, between on the fast end 12, on the low end like 5 or 4 degrees of a full body lean. But hey, we're doing this wall drill, and she squeezed her butt doing exercises, and it took her knee pain. It went from like 5 out of 10 to 2 out of 10. I'm like, all right, well, obviously we get your glute more awareness to your glutes, your butt. This is helping with your knee pain. So I just I said, hey, just focus on your glutes when you're doing these. And I haven't found a good cue for that as she's doing, you know, she's doing like these marching drills as she's doing these knee drives into the wall. And it helped. And I'm like, hey, continue to do these when you go home before you run. And this should help translate into your running form.
That's awesome to see. I want to get into some of the more controversial pieces of running form, because I know there's a lot of form deficiencies you talk about that are well known in running, but there's some form drills that are, or form deficiencies or mechanics that are a little more controversial. And the one that jumps to mind right away is, where should you strike the ground? Heel striking or forefoot striking? And I was a little surprised by your taking the book. Do you want to walk us through what is a proper foot strike as you're running?
Yeah. So in the book, we talk about the heel strike test. So essentially I'm like, if you're at home, if you're in a car, obviously you can't do this, but if you're at home listening to this, if you're on a carpet, a hardwood floor works really well, or even on outside on concrete or asphalt, take your shoes off, and start jumping. Essentially, most people, like, you're doing a jump rope or you're landing on the ball of your foot, and find a pace that feels comfortable and essentially just land directly on both heels. And I've had no one ever tell me this test feels good. So no one's ever passed it. You're not supposed to pass it. You're supposed to fail it. But the point of this is we don't want to be aggressively smacking the heel down. And I believe in the book, I'm a big proponent of, and I still am a big proponent of, like, landing slightly ball the foot and the heel kisses the ground and you push off. It actually uses more energy because you're using more of the calf muscle, but you get more energy return. If we know running is jumping, if we break it down to its first principles, Corey, which is like just breaking running down, like, what are its basic elements? What is running made out of? It's a repeated single leg hop over and over again, an alternating single leg hop, and then you fall forwards. And yes, there's a push and all that stuff, but that's essentially what running is. And if we're doing this, like, we don't we don't alternate hop on our heels. Maybe we can try to get a little bit of a slight ball of the foot. So I'm a big proponent of that. If you do land ball of foot, and I think I do go over how to do that in the book. You do need a good amount of calf strengthening because it loads your calves a lot. If you're not used to that, that can be an issue. But I will say this, there is an efficient heel strike where you're not overly heel striking and you have a relative heel strike where it's not an aggressive one, but you can have an efficient heel strike that is that you can run that way. Right? I'm not completely anti heel strike, but what I am anti is I'm anti overstriding with a heel strike. That is, to me, that's the bad heel strike. That's what you do not want to do. So, and I tend not to even cue people, Corey, to blend on the ball of their foot. I rarely, unless they want to do it, I'll cue them. I rarely cue someone. This is typically what happens. Someone comes in, they're really overstriding. We go over, we do things to decrease their overstriding. So instead of landing way out in front of their body, they're landing, it's impossible to land directly under your body. That's not what we're going for. We just want it to be closer to your center of mass. And in the book, it goes over these different degrees we're looking for of what the shin angle wants to look like. I like between 0 to 5, but it's hard to demonstrate it without, you know, opening up the book and showing everybody. So if you're interested in that, the book has a lot of visuals. But essentially what we're trying to do is if we can take the overstriding from, let's say, if you're at 20 degrees, drop it down even to 10, 5 degrees, 2 degrees, 5 or less is what I want to shoot for. That just the ground reaction force on your body is so much less than when you're at like 20 and 15. And also the heel strike, if you're overstriding, your heel strike is going to be higher no matter what. If we go to more optimal striking, your heel strike is automatically going to decrease, and or you might transition to more forefoot or closer to like a midfoot strike. Anytime I'm working with someone, I will, if they want to, that's fine, but we just go over how to not overstride, and runners make that transition on their own and they'll find what's more comfortable. But all I care about is we're going to fix the overstriding. You can choose the heel strike you want. I just want you to not overstride.
So is the heel striking a problem in itself, or is it a symptom of the problem being overstriding?
Yeah, it can be a problem. It's not as much of a problem as it is when it's paired with the overstriding.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. One other controversial form piece I wanted to make sure we touch on was breathing as well. Because I know in your book, you talk a little bit about nose breathing versus mouth breathing. So yep. What for those listening, what is the optimal way to take in oxygen as we run?
Yes, it hands down, it's in through the nose, out through the nose. There's so many benefits, Corey, of breathing, of inhaling and exhaling through your nose. There's a filtering that goes on, which, you know, I live in Frederick, Maryland, which is not a big city, but I'm sure there's some level of pollution in the air or some level of things. I'm breathing in smoke, I'm breathing in this, I'm breathing in that, pollen. Your nose filters that out. It has, there's hairs in your nose, there's mucous membranes. That's a big thing. Number two is it actually releases, I believe it's, I'm going to say this wrong, nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator. Essentially, vasodilates your airways, and I believe it gets into your bloodstream as well. So it just, when you breathe through your nose, it actually keeps your airways inflated, keeps them dilated, so more gas exchange can occur within the alveoli of the air sacs in your lungs. It actually helps turn your diaphragm on. When you mouth breathe, you tend to be a lot more of like upper trapezi and neck muscle, which we tend to find that a lot of runners have neck pain, and not a lot, but a lot of runners actually have more like this upper trap kind of shoulder pain. And it's like, oh, well, I'm stressed out a lot. I'm like, yeah, but you might just be upper trap breathing versus using your diaphragm, which is, yes, you're going to have this up and down motion. But when you breathe, Corey, you want to think like your ribs are expanding out laterally to the side. They're expanding out in the front. You're expanding 360 degrees. And I actually have this exercise where I wrap a big, strong band around someone's lower chest. I'm like, hey, breathe through your nose in and out into this. We can actually strength train the diaphragm. So there's, just a few other benefits, but there's a lot of benefits of, can you inhale and exhale through your nose? And think of the diaphragm too. It's actually called the second heart. So another kind of tip and running hack to probably improve your efficiency in running at these at whatever pace you're at. The diaphragm is a massive muscle that actually helps pump blood around your body and also pump blood back to your heart. So if you can use your diaphragm more, you're using two hearts to because it has a big big effect on the pressure or I believe it's a pressure, but like essentially just has a pressure effect on your body that it's gonna help pump blood around that just helps you run more efficiently. Just helps get oxygen to your muscles and then also take carbon dioxide back to your heart and then pump it back out of the lungs. So a lot of benefits of nasal breathing that you don't get from mouth breathing.
So Matt, everything you just said makes complete sense, but I want you to humor me with my runner brain that's not trained as a physio.
Yeah.
My first thought reading this is, but the mouth and your throat is bigger, so shouldn't you be able to take in more oxygen? What's your response to that?
Your mouth is made for eating, your nose is made for breathing. Like, your nose is
literally... I like it. Plain and simple.
Yeah, plain and simple. Your nose is literally made to bring in, there's more than just oxygen, but bring in oxygen and inhale oxygen, exhale CO2. Your mouth is not, yes, it depends. Like if my nose is stuffed, hey, we have this secondary part of my body that can, I don't suffocate, which is fantastic. I'm not saying I never breathe through my mouth, but I try to breathe through my nose specifically in inhale and exhale. And it can be tough. Like I understand, like I actually have one, I'm pretty sure I have a deviated septum, like one of my nostrils, like my right one, like it's very hard for me to get air in and out, the inhale and exhale. So I wear nasal strips. When I'm like, I really want to focus on my nasal breathing, I'll wear nasal strips when I run. That really helps me inhale and exhale through my nose. And growing up, I used to actually, I knew I couldn't breathe in through my nose and in an inhale and exhale because I have a deviated septum. So I'd have to actually, I would do like this. I would breathe half through my nose, half through my mouth, because to try and optimize my breathing as much as I can. You could do that. You could breathe in through your nose and your mouth to get as much oxygen and in and CO2 out. The nose, it's something else that I thought was really fascinating. And there's a book called Breath, which I learned a few things from that have been like wow, runners really benefit from this. And I included in Built to Run, where there's an optimal amount of, essentially we overbreathe. A lot of us overbreathe as humans, where there's CO2 tolerance training that I go over in the book. Like essentially, if you can become more tolerant at having higher levels of CO2 in your body, that actually helps you use oxygen more. Like we're breathing probably way too much, where, yeah, you can, like, yeah, you can definitely probably get more oxygen and CO2 out with mouth breathing, but breathing in and out through your nose, it's actually a more optimal rate that in the beginning might feel very uncomfortable. But if you can train your body to get used to that, and there's a lot of it's just nerve endings that trigger breathe, 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 breathe. You can train your body and train those nerve endings, those receptors in your brain and on your heart to not fire as aggressively. And your body just gets more desensitized to that. And you become more efficient. Essentially, you can handle nasal breathing better. And it actually helps you use oxygen more efficiently.
Interesting. I didn't think of breathing as something that could be trained the same way as a muscle. So it's cool that sounds like pretty much everything in your book can be improved upon one way or another.
Yes. Breathing is also, I keep saying low hanging fruit, but it really is. Yeah, it's something that I never really thought of from a running standpoint. There's also, do you remember reading about the double breath? Did you get that far in it?
I vaguely recall, but can you expand maybe on that technique?
Yes. And I actually, my buddies in high school made fun of me because I would breathe like this. It was like a, so it's, I don't know if you've ever heard anybody run like that, but essentially there's an initial inhale that's a little bit longer, and there's a shorter second inhale followed by a full exhale. And that second inhale, and I do this when I'm running at a steady state. I actually did it during Murph, which is it's a workout where you run a mile with a 20-pound weight vest. You do a bunch of squats, push-ups, and pull-ups, and you finish doing another mile. And it's with the weight vest on, it's rough. And I did that for the run, and it immediately, halfway through, I did, and I started doing the double breath, and immediately I was like, wow, I feel so much better. When running, especially running hard, our lungs will tend to collapse. So the air sacs, our alveoli, and just the lungs themselves, they tend to collapse as we're breathing aggressively and breathing hard. This double breath, that helps keep the lungs inflated, helps them from not collapsing. And that's going to increase the surface area of more oxygen is able to reach more blood, and then more blood can bind to that oxygen, and then that carries it to your muscles. So essentially, if you can keep your lungs inflated with using this double breath, it just makes running, again, more efficient, and you won't feel as terrible when when running. So someone's running. I got this a good amount when maybe like 2 years ago or a year ago. I got like an influx of patients who were like, I have a little bit of pain, but I just, every time I run easy, I just can't like catch my breath. It's hard for me to have to stop because I can't catch my breath. And we could talk about nasal breathing, which is going to be a part of this, but hey, let's just try this double breath. And they had some pretty good success with, even with their easy runs, and being able to maintain and continue to run without having to take breaks and you know, huff and puff and catch the breath.
Interesting. And the double breath, that's still through the nose?
Yeah, if you can. I was demonstrating here, I was doing it through half my nose, half my mouth, because I wanted people to hear it and not be like a weird stuffy sound. But if you can do it through your nose, for sure. And for me, I have to wear nasal strips, like the Breathe Right strips. I know some famous people are doing them now, like Alex Hormozi and a couple other people have the things around their nose. Think of that as it just dilates. It opens up your nasal passage, your nasal canals to let more oxygen in and CO2 out. Something I didn't include in the book is there's actually exercises you can do to contract these muscles. It's called your nasalis. That will do it for you. I don't know if I can do it here without cheating. My wife can. It's harder for me to flare my nose. But just like activating your foot muscles, you can train your nose to actually, you can contract that muscle, and it can essentially open your nose up without the need of the nasal strips. But if you're new to it, definitely try nasal strips, try running with those and see how nasal breathing, see how it goes for you. Cause, there's just a massive amount of benefits for nasal breathing. It can calm you down too. It has a parasympathetic response where it's like, hey, chill, relax, which a lot of people are stressed out nowadays. And since I've been doing nasal breathing, I feel less stressed out. There's so many benefits in nasal breathing core. I can't talk more highly of the start breathing through our nose and exhale, inhale and exhale.
That's awesome. I feel the need to point out that we do not have a nasal strip sponsorship, because you'd think we would with all the talk about nose breathing.
Yeah, I don't, I guess keyword is yet. So we'll see if I ever get one, but when I go for a run, I actually wear the, like, it's just the ones that you wear at night. I don't have the fancy ones. They look horrible. They look, you know, I just look super ugly with them on, but they work. You know, I run with them. I have the Echo bike, which is like, it's like that big CrossFit bike. It's a massive behemoth of a thing. I wear that and I nasal breathe, and it's a challenge. Like it's meant to, especially when I do the breath work, the breath holds and the CO2 tolerance training, like it can be relatively uncomfortable, but, that can really help your, essentially just build your CO2 tolerance up to when you are running hard, your body's already used to that sensation. It just doesn't feel like the urge to breathe. Like that's the urge that's just, man, it's primal and you have to stop what you're doing. Because like, if you don't breathe, and like, that's how we are alive. So if you can get, you can train your body to be more comfortable with essentially higher levels of CO2. It's not the lack of oxygen, it's higher levels of CO2, Corey, that cause us to breathe. If you get more comfortable with those higher levels of CO2, a lot of good things can happen.
Awesome. Definitely going to try that out for myself. I want to move on to one other thing that you pointed out yourself is super important to health and running. So I want to make sure we touch on it, which is strengthening your feet. Maybe not the first area people think to strengthen, but why is this important, and how can people actually get stronger feet?
Yeah, the feet, I mean, think of this as like, it's the first thing that hits the ground is your foot. And our foot is a mobile, I believe it's been described as like a leaf spring, where it should be able to morph and fit the ground and not be stuck in, you know, and it shouldn't be a brick. Your foot shouldn't just be, it's stiff, it's locked up, whether it's flat or high arch, I don't even care, or a neutral arch, your foot should be able to morph to the ground, pronate, people could say that. It's just, it has to dissipate force, and then when it hits the ground, and then when you push off, it has to stiffen and become a rigid lever for you to push off from and produce force. Problems arise when the foot is it's too stiff when it hits the ground, which sometimes, you know, not knock on Hoka, but that's a pretty big shoe with a lot of stack height, and people have these, you know, motion control shoes. Problems arise when the foot is too stiff on impact, and problems arise when it's not able to, first of all, not able to dissipate force, but not able to become a rigid lever on push off. And a big thing you can do with the, hey, if my foot is like, people say my foot's flat or it overpronates, those people tend to have a foot that doesn't know how to become rigid and become stiff and strong during that push off. And the moment, I'll see if I can show you here, Corey. This is my heel and this is the ball of my foot. When I heel strike, I hit the ground, I go through mid stance, and then I'm going to push off. The moment, the most unstable position of the foot is the moment that heel lifts off the ground. So this is like late mid stance. Essentially, we call it heel off. Right before push off, your heel's going to leave the ground. That's the most unstable position of your foot. So if we're trying to create stability in the foot, well, if we think we're going to get that with shoes that have, hey, I'm going to stabilize your heel and give you this big, you know, all this plastic around the heel, well, that's not really actually doing anything, because the heel's off the ground. This is the most unstable position. The heel's not on the ground. That all that plastic you put there is not doing anything. So, well, okay, Matt, well, if we're trying to create a stable foot, I have a flat foot, my foot overpronates in quotation marks, what do I do? Well, you can strengthen your intrinsic foot muscles. You can get them more active. You can aggressively push your big toe into the ground. You can create that stiff, you can create that strong, stable foot yourself and not have to rely on this shoe that, first of all, probably isn't even doing what we... The research has shown that, first of all, those shoes don't affect injury rates much at all, if any. And they're not really preventing overpronation. But yes, you can put your foot in a better position, but your foot's going to pronate. It's going to pronate as much as it wants to, really, no matter what. There's some things we can do to put your foot in a better position, but pronation is normal. It's going to happen. Instead of focusing on stop over pronating, let's focus on, hey, let's get your foot more active and more stable and be able to help you create a foot that, A, is going to dissipate force, but then can that can become a stiff lever and a strong lever that we can push from. And the way to do that is, hey, have a really strong and active big toe, and that's a strong active arch.
Yeah, and just as people are listening, if they can't see the hand gestures, I should call it, you're making to kind of demonstrate the phases of toe off. But essentially, it seems like you're referring to as your forefoot springs you forward near the end of your toe off. Is that right?
Yeah, it happens around late mid stance. Like the heel just comes off the ground. And then once that happens, that's where, I mean, the foot, don't get me wrong, the foot is important, but I give people exercise as well. I'll say, hey, we're going to stand up. You're going to press your big toe into the ground. And then while you're on, essentially we create, we call this the runner's tripod, Corey, where it's your thumb, it's your inside ball of foot and outside ball of foot. So essentially if it was my hand here, it's big toe, inside ball of foot, outside ball of foot, because my heel's off the ground. And then I'll have, we'll do a bunch of balance exercises, pass the kettlebell from side to side. We call a pass through as you're aggressively pushing your big toe down, because I want to teach that position of, we know this is the most unstable position where you probably have problems from. Let's start to create some capacity and just create some stability here, so you have a stronger push off that you'll be able to produce more force and become a more efficient runner by doing this.
So I know one of the exercises my own physio prescribes, you kind of scrunch the toes, keep it straight, and then go to the outside, go to the inside. So essentially just scrunch, and then as you continue to do that, kind of move to the outside of your foot and then onto the inside. It sounds like it's kind of touching on those three areas. Is that what's happening there? And if not, maybe what are some of the movements runners can use to make sure that they target all those different areas of their foot?
I think of toe scrunching. It's not that this is a bad exercise. It's just not, it's not really accomplishing the goal of creating this foot stability. So, I mean, you could strengthen your arch like a little bit that way, but the problem is we have these long toe flexors that they actually start in the calf. They're deep to that soleus we talked about. They're actually deep to that. They're right on the back wall of your shin bone. And there's a big long tendon that goes around the inside of your ankle, and it goes all the way to your toes and your big toe. And that's what really scrunches things. Instead of scrunching, I want you to think like we're pressing straight down. Where instead of like scrunching that toe or you're flexing it, think like you're going to bring your big toe up and then press it straight down into the ground. That's how you can really activate the arches. And then you can press it down, and I'll have people try to kick the big toe. I guess technically it's out, but it's towards your midline. So if someone has a bunion and they have that bony growth and their foot, your big toe is kind of curved towards the other toes. Hey, let's get some foot activation and strength in there, because that can actually help a lot with bunions, definitely with the pain. But hey, let's try to get that, press that big toe down and create some stability, and then move that big toe, the opposite way of the bunion, and try to give you some access to some more range of motion. But that's what I'm looking for. Hey, I'm trying to activate someone's arches. I'm trying to say, can you stand on one leg, press your big toe into the ground, and let's do a bunch of exercises as your big toe is pressed. That helps keep your foot from being super wobbly. You press that big toe down, it helps anchor the foot to the ground, so you don't get all this excessive wobbling that may occur when running.
Yeah, and to the credit of my chiro, I'm sure that was probably the initial direction they gave that maybe got obscured as they described it to me through broken telephone, or maybe me interpreting it how I wanted to. But you touched on something you discussed in your book, which is kind of the paradox of cushioning, or the fact that shoes having more cushioning, there's not evidence that it promotes any injury reduction. But one other trend we've seen in footwear beyond just the additional cushioning is the introduction of stiffening agents like a carbon plate. I wonder, do you have any thoughts on whether that has an impact on injury rates, either positive or negative?
Yeah, I think when we're looking at, hey, I have a super shoe with a carbon plate or a nylon plate, which I'm assuming nylon. I feel like I've definitely felt carbon shoes, nylon plated shoes. Are they also fairly stiff?
They're stiff, but not quite as much as carbon.
So with those shoes, here's what I do know. I know that they do, like most shoes, you're not actually getting an energy return. It's just, some research says this, some doesn't. So I'm going to say maybe not, but, shoes that have higher cushion, you tend to get a little bit of force attenuation, which is the ground reaction force might not be as high or as aggressive. But with super shoes, you're actually getting an energy return. Like, yes, it's a stiffer shoe that, when you push off that stiffening agent, you're going to push off its, I've seen those commercials where it's like that insole and they compress it and it flies up in the air. That's what I'm thinking of. Like, you're going to get some energy return from those. The problem is it's a trampoline that does not discriminate. So if you're hitting the trampoline, if I'm like, let's say if I'm going to jump on the trampoline, like I'm going to run, I'm going to jump off my house and jump on the trampoline. Well, you have some forward momentum and the trampoline, okay, you're going to hit the trampoline, and you're also going to jump off of the trampoline because you hit it, you're going forwards with it, versus if I'm just going up and down with it. So think of them as a trampoline, where if your running form is off or something is weak and your knee's caving in or your hip is dropping, you're overstriding. I mean, if you're overstriding, there you have excessive force that's pushing you backwards. With a super shoe, that's only going to be accentuated. You're going to have more of that deceleration force. So if someone's going to use a super shoe, number one, we have to make sure we're moving correctly. So if someone's a new runner, like, don't even touch super shoes, because you're going to mature as a runner. And once you really have worked towards these things, if your running form is on point, you're pretty good at strengthening, your mobility is where it needs to be, and you're an efficient runner, then we can talk about that. But someone who's new to running, enjoy the sport of running, right? You might not be perfect. That's fine. Right? We all got to start somewhere, get into it, enjoy it. But that's kind of where I fall on super shoes is, you're going to get some energy return, especially if it's better for runners that are, I believe they might get like a 5% energy return. If you're a really efficient runner, if you're not as efficient, it might be like 2 or 3%. So if you're going to spend them $500 or whatever, $200 on a super shoe, it pays to, it's just, if you're a more efficient runner and a faster runner, you tend to get a little bit more out of this. But they're non-discriminant. So if you are going to hit the ground properly, that energy return is going to come back to you in an optimal way, where if you're not hitting the ground the right way, it might come back. It's going to come back to you in an inoptimal way. And I've seen some runners who had injuries when they switched to those, and I'm like, stop the shoes. Let's just see what's going on. Let's see why this happened.
Yeah. So it's really extenuating any of those form deficiencies. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's not going to make them, how do I say this? It's not going to make you overstride more. It's just the force that's going through your body is now increased. Like you're getting energy return. Like I think if you're running at first, you're running on like a small trampoline, and now, well, let's just use this as an example. You're running on a small trampoline, and now you're just like, let's just say you have a trampoline that's going to bounce you even higher. Well, if the first trampoline was only bouncing you 4 feet in the air, and you jump off, that's fine. But now you're bouncing 10 feet in the air, you might injure yourself when you land.
Yeah. Good analogy. Just as we kind of go over all the different ways that runners can reduce their injury risk, because I know you really set out with this book to, again, be a manual for runners to stay healthy and fit and enjoy the sport for longer. Is there anything else that you would want to share with runners where that piece of good health and fun is really a priority?
Yeah, I think that's, see, we hit a lot of topics, which is good, but I think running is, like, I don't want people to be afraid of running. Like, if you're new to running, like, get into it. Like, it's a great sport, but I feel that there's a lot of low hanging fruit that runners can take advantage of. Running form's probably a big one that doesn't get as much attention. I think strength training we've done a good job as a community, as a running community, of beating that one, not to death, but I think we've beaten that one pretty good into people's skulls, where either they know they need to strength train and they don't do it, or they strength train and they do it. But I think running form is a big thing that we can work on, that runners can work on for sure. I think we hit most of the topics. I think one thing that I think runners need to realize as well is that injuries, running is a delicate balance of most injuries are, it's an overused sport, unless you stepped off a curb and you landed with your knee in an awkward position, or you sprained your ankle that way. You know, those are cute things that happen, but most plantar fasciitis, runner's knee, IT band, Achilles tendinosis, these are things that are overuse, and running is a delicate balance of hey, you're hitting mileage, but you don't want to overdo it, right? This delicate game of stressing your body and recover, and stress and recover. And if we can do anything to, because whatever the stress is, that's your running volume. That's the workouts you do, right? That's a different conversation we can have, where what's your mileage? What are you training for? What are your hard workouts? What are your days off, recovery stuff? That's all fine. But what we can do on this side of, hey, we can improve your running form, we can improve your strength, we can improve your mobility. All these things are going to bulletproof you to keep injuries away and keep you being able to handle all this training stimulus from I'm going to go run 5 miles or a tempo workout. That's the importance of this. And yes, it's very time consuming, and I get that. But I think if anybody takes anything away from this, it's, let's hit the lowest hanging fruit, because you're going to get the most bang for your buck with the least amount of time. And that could be running form. I think that's running form. I think that's mobility, a certain amount of strengthening. If we can target soleus and hamstrings, you're getting a lot of benefit just from doing those two things. So if we can target these low hanging fruits, that can do, that can give you a lot of benefit from handling the stresses and the strains of your running regimen.
Well said. I love it. Dr. Matt Silver, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey. Do you want me to show people how to tell people how to get the book if they want it?
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll link in the show notes, but if you want to tell people right now where they can find it, by all means.
Yeah. If anyone's interested, get it for 20% off. It is on Amazon. If you are in Canada or outside the US, Amazon's probably your best bet. But if you're in the US, you can go to alphaprojectphysio.com/built-to-run or alphaprojectphysio.com. And then there's on a top tab, it says built to run. You get the book from us, 20% off. And we also send a free gift, which is a sticker that hopefully I sent you one, Corey. If I didn't, then I got to send you one. But anyway, you get it there. And if you get it, that you enjoy the book.
That's great. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I find it's a great manual to refer to back to. I read it the first time, but I find after strength, sometimes I'll go back to sections and kind of reread to find interesting ideas. So it's great for that.
There is photos. There's a lot of colorful photos in the book that show how to do all the exercises, if anyone's wondering.
there are a lot of photos and images, and they're quite helpful. Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Matt.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Corey.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast. I'm the showrunner at Runners Connect, where, as always, our mission is to help you become a better runner with every episode. You can connect with me on Instagram at Corey_Nagler or through Strava by searching Corey Nagler. And please consider connecting with the rest of our team at runnersconnect.net. If you're loving the show, you can help us reach more runners by leaving a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Lastly, if you want bonus content, behind-the-scenes experiences with guests, and premier access to contests, and consider subscribing to our newsletter by going to runnersconnect.net/podcast. I'll see you on the next show, but until then, happy running, everyone.